Classic Business, Education and Training.
The Classic Business Show is brought to you by Altron, technology partners in your digital transformation journey. For more information, visit altron.com. Altron, there when it matters. Jenny Retief is the CEO of River Sands Incubation Hub, and she joins me now to talk more about coding in schools. As with many countries, South Africa is seriously considering including coding into the national curriculum. In fact, earlier this year, Cyril Ramaphosa made it very clear that inclusion will be an objective he intends to see come to fruition during his presidency. This is commendable, but is it realistic? Jenny, good evening. So how realistic is this really?
Good evening, Kirby. Look, it's great to see this topic getting presidential level attention, but I think especially in under-resourced schools, we have to be careful to do it in a way where we don't actually increase the digital divide instead of narrowing it. I think it's also important to remember that the coding we would teach today will probably be redundant in 5 or 6 years' time. And about learning and artificial intelligence. So it's important to teach it in a way of increasing a sort of digital fluency, where the underlying skills of computational thinking and logic, the ability to break complex problems down into smaller pieces for easier solving, that coding skills would give someone, that it's those that we really focus on, because those will be evergreen and be useful even when the technologies and tools we know now have moved on to what lies 10 or 20 years in our future.
I was interested to note that those individuals that have had technology from their earliest age today are called digital natives. That clearly is not somebody like myself, for instance. But this has really required a much larger encompassing experience with technology. Is this even something that schools can teach at the end of the day? I mean, this thing that you're talking about isn't necessarily just about coding. It's about a whole experience. We've got schools trying to still sort out their ablution facilities rather than trying to teach coding and trying to have an encompassing experience with technology. What are the steps towards this? Do you even think that this is possible?
Those basics are critical. In a school that doesn't have electricity or connectivity, it will be very difficult to achieve what is really needed, which is that technology interweaves across all subjects. That is how it should ideally be taught. So it is about providing the tablets and the connectivity that have been spoken about, or access to computers or the various tools. But it's also a mindset shift away from this kind of very siloed approach to different subject disciplines, and rather interleaving technology across all of them. You know, instead of having the kids draw up a rainfall table for geography using a pencil and ruler, let them use a spreadsheet. Let them use computer-aided design tools for certain design projects. Productivity and calendaring and task management tools for managing their workloads. You know, those kinds of things would be far closer to the work world of even today and into the future, so that they learn that. It's really, I think, the term digital fluency really encapsulates that. And for our under-resourced school, that's going to be really challenging when, as you say, you know, basics like water and ablutions are still missing. So I do think our education authorities need to keep their focus on that, but we can't neglect the technology side. So it's great to see it achieving that kind of attention. Another factor that I'd like to highlight that I think is critical is that not everyone is an engineer or a coder. And the interesting thing about the fourth industrial revolution, and as the levels of artificial intelligence and automation increase, is you start to see what they talk about as the automation paradox, where some of those qualities that are so intrinsically human and very difficult for artificial intelligence to emulate, things like empathetic interaction, collaboration, intuitiveness, ingenuity, even art and aesthetics, are going to become even more precious and valued, even though there will be huge demand for engineers and maths and technology graduates. So I think we should also be careful of sending a message to our learners that if you're not an engineer or a techie, you know, there's not a place for you in the workaday world of the future, because it's definitely not the case in my view.
Jenny, surely the way that one bridges this whole issue is by ensuring that, and I mean, I'm fully aware that this costs money, but it's to provide kids with tablets or provide kids with the technology and then with the ability to be able to interact with the technology. Because it's amazing how people just self-teach themselves, you know, utilizing a specific type of technology. Surely that's the way that one goes about this rather than trying to teach coding.
Yes, I'd agree with that, because coding taught as a theoretic subject where you sort of memorize the protocols or syntax that happens to be relevant now would really be, you know, very limiting and even a waste. Whereas what you're describing, where you give tools, and I would say there's also an element to almost of mindset, which includes permission to experiment, permission to play, whereby our learners will develop that self-directed learning, the idea of solving problems and utilizing those tools to apply technology and innovate. And that would really be enabling for our learners for a career and an employability into the future. So I strongly agree with you. We have to emphasize getting a whole range of tools, which would be software tools, hardware, tablets, whatever is possible within the resources of the school, but also those basics of electricity and activity are critical too. But as a big mind shift change from the idea of tutor-led instruction as the way, and more of, as you say, allowing learners to interact with the tools and to begin that interdisciplinary use of knowledge and technology to solve problems, to innovate, to create the future world we'd like to live in.
Because it's not just about the skills, as you've rightly pointed out, but it's also about the execution. And surely one of the biggest issues is that teachers don't know how to teach coding. How does a teacher teach coding if they're battling to potentially just teach the normal curriculum on a daily basis? The other issue as well that I'm just seeing in this whole thing with trying to teach kids coding is that, as you've said, it's pretty siloed. But if you made it more multidisciplinary, isn't that ultimately going to be taking the burden off, you know, government trying to roll out more and more and more schools to try and push kids through institutions that, quite frankly, are very difficult to control? We've just in this last week seen a whole bunch of horror stories where kids where kids got stabbed at school, and where there's now court cases that are going on. You know, is the trend not for people to start learning potentially outside of the school environment, potentially at home and potentially maybe in learning centers from time to time? And that surely must take away, if you use technology, it takes away the burden of trying to put up more and more schools.
Yes, indeed. We can massively augment our education capacity by broadening in that way. I mean, internationally, that's very much the discussions as well, is what are the education, they talk about education ecosystems, which I think underlines your point, that it's not just a responsibility of a school or a teacher. It's a whole across all stakeholders, including the learner, enabling them to follow their own self-directed learning journey. And given the pace of change that's likely to exist, none of us is going to find that what we came out of school with is going to be adequate to our careers even 5 years after school. So exactly as you say, allowing a far more enabling, self-directed parent, home, society, as well as school would be a much better way to go.
Jenny, you form part of of the River Sands Incubation Hub. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Oh, with pleasure. It's quite an ambitious project. We believe that so we focus on helping small businesses, particularly black-owned small businesses. We feel the barriers to entry for startup entrepreneurs to access good infrastructure and the various tools and help that they need to grow a business are still very high in South Africa, especially for black entrepreneurs. So we have 160 service factories on our campus in a secure upmarket small business campus with everything optimized for the startup environment, which is tends to be a very agile environment. Things change from one month to another. We help not only with the subsidized infrastructure, but also with coaching and mentoring, back office support, things like accounting and financial management, as well as with facilitating market access in a variety of ways. And I must tell you, it's quite exciting when there's gloomy news, out there in the mainstream news. It's a great way to sort of realize that there's a lot more positive stuff happening. The entrepreneurial business owners are just amazing in their energy, their commitment, their ability to overcome obstacles. And it's a great privilege to be part of that.
Well, Jenny Retief is the CEO for River Sands Incubation Hub. This is Classic 102.7.